United States versus Resnick. Mr. Pallas.
May it please the court. Adam Resnick was convicted of a rather unique form of bank fraud, a single bank check-kiting scheme that was facilitated by his co-conspirators. Bank records revealed payments to Dominic Poeta, alleged by Mr. Resnick to be a bookie. And approximately 6 years later, a citation to discovery assets was initiated by the United States. Ultimately, after a motion for judgment on the pleadings was provisionally delayed, the court heard some evidence, and at that hearing, the government failed to prove that the transfers of property involved, the transfers of money involved, were actually the property of the judgment debtor, Adam Resnick. Court
see
found
what difference? See what difference that makes. I mean, suppose I stole money from you, and you sue me, you know, for conversion, and you win, and then, you know, I don't pay anything, so you have a citation proceeding, and I say, well, actually, I stole your money, I admit it, but I gave all the money to Judge Mannion. Mm-hmm. Now, can't you just bring a citation proceeding against him? What does it matter with? I mean, obviously, I don't have a good title to the money. That's why I lost the case. But I possessed the money. I possessed your money. You're trying to get it back from me, and I shifted the possession to someone else. So you go after that person. I don't see what.
Well, there's a couple points again.
I don't get what difference it makes. What kind of title the defendant has. If he had possession of someone's property wrongfully and he passed it on to someone else, you go chasing the money down to that other person.
Well, there's a couple aspects of that. One is that, again, the citation proceeding is for a limited purpose, and that is...
Yeah, and I described a case which seems to me within the core of the purpose of a citation proceeding. Now, maybe you disagree, and you think that in the hypothetical case I gave... You couldn't use a citation proceeding to get the money back from Judge Mannion.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think you would have to bring an individual action against Judge Mannion.
I don't even understand that. I mean, the whole point is if you're going after money that the defendant owes you, and he's giving it to someone else, he's never going to have title to that.
Well, and
you
one of the points...
require title in the citation proceeding, right? That's
well,
why
but,
I don't get your argument at all.
Well, again, the language is very clear that, of the citation proceeding that it's formed, that the questions involved are there assets of the debtor and does the defendant, the citation respondent have possession?
Why do you need more than possession on the part of the... debtor? Why does he have to have title?
I did not suggest that he needed title.
Well, then you're agreeing with me. In my case, I have possession. I'm the crook. I have possession, but I've given the money to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, if possession is enough, then why isn't it a perfectly good citation case?
Well. You might argue that Resnick at one point had some sort of possession, but there's a couple points. One, money itself is a fungible and intangible species of property.
So what?
Well, for example, it's not properly the subject of a conversion action.
Of course it is.
Well, Your Honor, the only thing I could say there is we cited a case.
You steal my money. You steal my money. I can't sue you for conversion.
If there is an identifiable fund that contains that money, This was brought 5.5 years after the...
No, I don't understand. You steal my money, and you steal my money, and you buy something with it, the money disappears, and so on. Fine. Mm-hmm. You mean I have no civil remedy against you?
No. You have a civil remedy.
What's it called?
It's called a lawsuit.
Yes, a lawsuit has to be a cause of action. You don't bring a... Right? And what's the name of the cause of action?
The lawsuit could be unjust enrichment. Well...
No, it's conversion. You took my money. It's conversion. It doesn't matter what happened to the money.
Well, the only thing that I would say in that regard, and I know this is not binding on the court, but we cited the Kentucky Anna case, a case which I recall may have been decided by Judge Hamilton, in which he points out that that in the context of collection proceedings, a claim for conversion does not lie against a particular amount of money unless that money has at some point been segregated and identified.
You have to tell me, since you admit that if you steal my money, I have a civil remedy against you.
Yes.
What would you like to call my cause of action? If it's not conversion, what is it?
Well, again, I think the government called it restitution, but I think it's more properly unjust enrichment.
All right, we'll call it unjust enrichment.
Again, right? Because keep in mind, the person involved here...
What it's called? I don't understand that. The point is, if I've stolen your money, you have a civil remedy against me. You get a judgment that I pay the money. You try to collect it. You discover I gave the money to Judge Mannion.
Yes.
So you follow the money into Judge Mannion's possession,
yes,
with a citation proceeding.
But even if the case against Adam Resnick is styled a conversion action, the case against Judge Mannion, presumably a holder in due course of some sort,
he may be a...
He's not a holder in due course. Yeah. He didn't exchange anything for value. That's your problem.
Okay, fine. But in any event, whatever reason Judge Mannion got it, Judge Mannion did not convert the amount of money.
That's not the point. He's holding the money. Look, it's very typical for someone who owes a debt to take the money and hide it somewhere else, in someone else's possession. That's what you have these citation proceedings for. Mm-hmm. Now, if the person got the money for value, fine. But if he didn't, then you use the citation proceeding to get it back.
Well, again, I disagree that...
Well, but then you don't have any notion of when you can use a citation proceeding.
I believe you can use a citation. If it was a fungible object, for example, I gave Judge Mannion a watch... And he maintained possession of the watch, yes, then that would be appropriate.
And why should that make a difference?
Because it's identifiable here.
What difference does it make? The point is it's a debt. I owe $1 million. I gave $1 million to Judge Mannion. So you go after Judge Mannion. Why does it make a difference whether it's an identifiable object? I mean, it does if you have a suit for replevin, right?
Right.
But
which is largely the nature of the state
point?
Citation.
What's the point in not being able to use citation proceedings when the thing stolen, converted, what have you, is money rather than an object? What sense would that make?
The sense that, well... I think one of the reasons is that the money in this case is fictional. I mean, in other words, the money never really existed. In other words, it was a churn of money. The bank knowingly was allowing him to float.
He wrote checks to your client. Those checks were presumably honored, right?
True.
Okay. So there was some real money involved here, right?
Yes, that would be true.
Okay,
that would be true.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Pallas?
Yes.
I had understood your argument to be, in essence, maybe there's a claim here for unjust enrichment.
Yes.
But you can't do it in a supplemental proceeding. You need to give us the full panoply of civil procedures.
Yes.
When was that issue first raised with the district court? The government says that you raised it way too late.
Yes. Well, keep in mind that my position was that if you had that the property was an element of.
When did you raise this issue?
Yes, during the closing argument. In other words, the failure of proof.
Is that the passage that you've quoted
yes.
in your reply brief?
Yes.
I've got to tell you, I read that and I didn't understand it.
Well, I believe the judge understood it because he said, I see what you're saying. You're saying that you don't have a supplemental proceeding unless it's the property. We're looking for Resnick's money. We're not looking for Poeta's money. And I think it was very, very clear to him at the time that was my point, that both procedurally there was an element, a substantive element of the fraudulent transfer that was missing, as well as an element of a supplementary proceeding.
Right, but the whole theory of unjust enrichment was also tried to the district court, right?
Yes.
I know it wasn't pled originally, but it was
not pled.
But it was tried.
It was, in essence, at the end, it was argued, closing argument, the attorney for the United States said, okay, it's also if we lose on fraudulent transfer, we win on restitution, as he framed it, restitution.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pallas. Mr. Stewart?
May it please the Court. Counsel. The district court judgment should be affirmed in this case. The district court properly entered judgment on the government's fraudulent transfer claim and on the unjust enrichment claim. The judgment will effectively
return. You'll have to speak up. And not read your argument either. We don't approve of that.
You might pull the microphone a little closer. So I'm not sure which. I'm new here, so I'm not sure which one works. So.
I'll just pick up.
I think the one in the middle probably is the amplifier.
The district court judge properly entered judgment on behalf of the government in this case on both claims that they brought on the fraudulent transfer claim and on the unjust enrichment claim. The fraudulent transfer claim had two elements to it, that property was transferred without receiving reasonably equivalent value in exchange, and the debtor did so at a time when he knew or he should have known that he would be incurring debts beyond his ability to pay. Judge Anderson clearly found that transferring 16 checks worth almost $650,000 to Dominic Poeta the debtor did not receive anything of reasonably equivalent value in exchange because it was for an illegal gambling contract. On the second element, the judge also found that Adam Resnick's conduct in fleecing Universal Bank over a period of 6 months of $10 million certainly showed an intent to incur debts beyond his ability to pay. And when he used the proceeds of that crime to engage primarily in illegal gambling or any kind of gambling, that just only reinforced that proposition. So certainly there was a proper judgment around the fraudulent transfer claim. The unjust enrichment claim, the same thing. Two elements to an unjust enrichment claim, that the defendant is unjustly enriched and retains a benefit to the detriment of the defendant, and his retention of that benefit is against principles of justice, equity, and in that case, that was proved here too. There was just no question about the evidence here that the money that Adam Resnick stole was traced
to. Now, what does unjust enrichment add to, fraudulent transfer?
At one point in the trial, Your Honor, there was an argument about who could properly be considered the owner of the funds.
Why does it matter? I don't understand that. If you're in possession of it, of course.
We agree with you, Your Honor. We agree with you that it doesn't matter. But as a stopgap measure to make sure that in the end that we would have a 100% chance of prevailing in this case, we advanced both theories. And just so the record's clear, in our petition, we advanced two theories of fraudulent transfer, one intentional and one constructive. And it was only at the point that we moved for judgment did we add the restitution claim, and that both claims, the fraudulent transfer and restitution, were tried and successfully tried. And so far as the ownership issue, though, is concerned, just want to address that. The defendant makes much of Section 33054, and I'll quote, it says, a transfer is not made until the debtor has acquired rights in the asset transferred. That's all it says to make out a fraudulent transfer claim. It doesn't say that you need to have fee simple title or good title. It just says you have to have acquired a right, and we showed that the
possession is good enough.
Yes. And, in fact, even the case that is cited by Poeta, the Reagan versus Evanelli case, is a perfect example of that, where children were trying to sell a piece of real estate out in the suburbs. They had a contract for the sale of that property. When problems occurred, they transferred the property to their father. Their father then held himself out as the owner and tried to develop the property himself. The buyers of the property, the original buyers, then sued the father for all sorts of torts, interference with the contract and what have you, and received a judgment against the father. And then went after the father. The father, while that suit was pending, transferred the property back to his children. The original buyers then sued the father for fraudulent transfer. And the father, of course, said, well, I'm not really the owner of that property. But the appellate court in that case said that it was enough that the father had a possessory interest in that property. He exercised dominion and control over that property. So we think that that is all that's enough. You don't have to look any further than that, than possession and control.
I guess what you're saying, he didn't have legal possession, he just had actual possession. Is that
he had both legal and actual possession because he was a signatory to the NEA account.
So what's the legal possession?
Well,
I guess.
He was a signatory to the account, so he could write, Adam Resnick could write checks off that account.
So on the surface, at least, it's legal.
On the surface, most definitely.
Yeah. But the unjust enrichment, the court did find in both issues. It's just that
he found for the government.
It seems to be the first issue is that the fraudulent transfer sort of fallback is the unjust.
That's most correct. And with regard to the propriety of the supplementary proceedings, really that did only come up into way after the citation to the closing argument of Mr. Poeta really mentioned possession in terms of the fraudulent transfer action, because that's when the possession issue was argued. It was argued in terms of the fraudulent transfer action. It wasn't until after Judge Anderson indicated what his decision would be Mr. Poeta even raised the issue of the propriety of the supplementary proceedings. And that's confirmed when we were arguing about the findings of fact and conclusions of law. There was a number of findings of fact and conclusions that addressed the propriety of the supplementary proceedings. And Mr. Poeta made no objection to those things. And that's in the transcript, and we've cited that in our brief. So with regard to the two other issues, the mitigation issue, that's simply, I think, a non-starter. Again, it was raised too late, and it's not really appropriate in this case. We weren't seeking to hold Mr. Poeta liable for the losses of Universal. If you recall, Mr. Poeta is trying to say that Universal is liable for its own losses in this case. Well, we're not trying to hold Mr. Poeta liable for the bank's losses. We're simply holding him liable for having received $650,000 from Mr. Resnick and given nothing in exchange. So, as far as the credits issue, there was simply no evidence that the defendant presented that connected up the credits that he was seeking to the monies that we proved beyond a reasonable doubt went from Mr. Resnick to Mr. Poeta. And most especially, the evidence was lacking to show that even if you could prove that some money went from Poeta back to Resnick, that should in some way or another be credited against the same account, the same gambling account that Poeta and Resnick had together. So, in conclusion, if there's no other questions, we just ask you to affirm the district court's judgment.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Stewart, and thank you to Mr. Pallas also. Unless you have something further, you have.
First of all, on the possession issue, the government has ignored anything related to a separate subset, $244,000, which were written as official checks by Tony Navarro at the bank. this at a time prior to her involvement in the criminal conspiracy, and when the evidence was that she knew that Resnick was $1 million in the hole, she decided to make him an undocumented, interest-free loan. Secondly, as far as the mitigation goes, the government explicitly said that with respect to the unjust enrichment claim, they were standing within the shoes of the bank, not the government. I mean, sorry, not Mr. Resnick. They were specifically in the shoes of the bank, and the bank then, and therefore they would take all the defenses that were exist against the bank, which again was gross recklessness, intentional conduct to allow this to happen. And then finally, with respect to the credits, the fact of the matter is that when you give someone cash, and some of this was specifically documented in the government proof of loss, if Poeta pays Resnick cash, he's entitled to a set-off, either on equitable principles or on the theory that he's providing equivalent value.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Palace and Mr. Stewart. Next case.